Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. August 19, 2019. My thoughts on Twitter the 19th of August 2019. Choice is the most important thing in our life. We are making choices non-stop, comparing, consciously or unconsciously, and changing our approach. Our entire life is a choice of the best option as per the new criteria, determined by what is most important right now. When the importance of spirituality falls in my eyes, it's as if the staff falls out of my hands and turns into a serpent. But these two states are connected. We cannot rise up without descending down. The Creator made one against the other. The staff holds me up high, and the serpent pulls me down. I choose. If spirituality falls in my eyes, and I elevate it, it means I am walking with the staff. The nature of the staff is such that it constantly falls, and I have to lift it up every time. That's how I lead the ten, and it holds me. Aaron knows and knows. The staff falls, I lift it and thus walk towards the goal. Our work lies in annulling ourselves to zero, so there will be no one besides the Creator. From that zero, we must lower ourselves till negative infinity, so all the work will be done not by us, but by the Creator per our request. Thus from 100% egoism we descend to -100%, in which the Creator is revealed. We have to work with our will to enjoy for the sake of bestowal, meaning, use our egoism to the fullest. By doing our work, we grow our egoism 620-fold and attain a corrected desire that's 620 times greater than the original one. The next egoistic degree comes from the light, which I drew for the sake of bestowal, and then fell and wished to have it for myself. This is the staff and the serpent, the importance of bestowal falls, I must raise it higher and higher. I thus attain a desire that's 620 times greater by virtue of egoism's expansion by the light. We lower our egoism, but it grows even more each time. The light that enters fans our ego on the following degree. As a result of our efforts, light enters us for the sake of bestowal, but we fall and wish to receive for our own sake. That's how light raises egoism to the light's degree. Spiritual movement happens by revealing an empty space, desire and filling it with the quality of bestowal, the Creator. So it has two polar states, sin, egoism, and its filling by bestowal. Revelation of evil is necessary and mandatory at the beginning of every new spiritual state. The Torah of Israel, Unification. Baal HaSulam writes in the article The Messiah's Shofar, we have accepted that there is a precondition for the redemption, that all the nations of the world will acknowledge Israel's law, as it is written, and the land shall be full of the knowledge, as in the example of the Exodus from Egypt, where there was a precondition that Pharaoh, too, would acknowledge the true God and his laws, and would allow them to leave. The Pharaoh himself opened the door for the Exodus from Egypt, with intention for his own sake, and allowed people, especially the people of Israel, to exit egoism, the Egyptian slavery. Pharaoh did it himself. He is the opposite of the Creator himself, he is his reverse side. In the same way, we must spread the wisdom of Kabbalah as a prerequisite to redemption so that all nations will learn about the teachings of Israel and the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Creator. Even Pharaoh is obliged to recognize the true Creator and his commandments, that is, the need to act not on the orders of Pharaoh for his own sake, but for the sake of bestowal, and allow the person to leave. This means that a person understands that this is right and true, there is no choice, and he must change. This understanding should unfold throughout the world as a result of the dissemination of the wisdom of Kabbalah. Now the situation is exactly the opposite, anti-Semitism is growing, the people of the world want to eliminate the state of Israel. They have to be brought to the wisdom of Kabbalah until all nations hear and recognize that the wisdom of the Creator is in the midst of Israel. This is our task, otherwise we will not be able to advance. Our task is to begin this work and the upper force will finish it. That was the condition for redemption from all their exiles and especially this one. The last one. The situation is developing at a catastrophic rate, becoming more and more threatening. We cannot escape from our mission, the Creator will force us to fulfill it by all means. After all, it is a law that the wisdom of Kabbalah must spread throughout the world so that all the people understand the method of correction. At least they should know that the people of Israel have a method to get rid of all problems and troubles in the corporeal world. Every day the situation in the world pushes us to this more and more. It is already clearly felt that the upper force acts upon us and creates conditions that are illogical from the point of view of earthly representations. The closer the spiritual forces and laws approach our world, the more extreme the conditions become, the reality of which is simply impossible to believe. We are now in a transitional state between exile and liberation when it is so crucial to spread the wisdom of Kabbalah in the world and especially to the people of Israel. We came out of exile, but did not achieve a redemption, we were just given this opportunity and this is the time to prepare for it. Therefore, we need to spread the wisdom of Kabbalah to the people of Israel through all possible channels. We cannot miss this moment. People must understand that it is impossible to achieve the correction of the world by any other means except, first of all, through the unification of the people of Israel from which this unity will spread to the whole world. The world needs it more and more every day. Unification is the Torah of Israel. The exit from the desire to enjoy for one's own sake, that is, from mutual hatred, is called redemption. From the third part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, the 27th of July 2019, the importance of disseminating the wisdom of Kabbalah to the world. Michael Leitman, on Quora, which side is right in the Israel-Palestine conflict? No side is correct because no side knows the truth. The question is, what is the truth? The people of Israel alone determine the attitude that the nations of the world have toward them. The nations of the world have no free choice in how they perceive Israel. According to the wisdom of Kabbalah, Israel are people with free choice, because it was the people of Israel who were granted the ability to rise above the egoistic human nature, the desire to enjoy at the expense of others, that runs on autopilot within each and every person. If the people of Israel make the choice to rise above the divisive egoistic drives and unite, then an abundance of goodness will flow out to the world through them. Likewise, if the people of Israel fail in making that choice, letting egoism continue to grow unabated, then no agreements will help them, it will be bad for them and for the world. Free choice is the choice to connect among each other and by doing so, reveal the upper force, the force of connection and love, here in this world. If we fail to make that choice, then the negative side of the force of connection and love, division and hatred due to egoistic desires growing without any effective regulation, will ripple out to all humanity in depth and width. This is the root of any positive or negative attitude toward Israel from the nations of the world. Today, since the people of Israel are not making any effort to realize their unifying role in the world, then anti-Semitic and anti-Israeli sentiment, including denial of the State of Israel, grows in order to pressure the people of Israel to fulfill their duty in the world. Therefore, Palestinians are not responsible for the way they think and behave toward Israel. The law of nature draws humanity to connection at the peak of its development, and those who resist and deny Israel act according to their function within this system, which is to pressure the people of Israel to exercise their free choice. I thus see in Israel's hate as simply the force of nature, which reveals itself to us in such a way. The people of Israel, however, have free choice, that is the ability to change themselves, as they have been given a method of the world's correction. So who's to blame? I can't say that Palestinians or anyone in the world are to blame for any of their hatred toward Israel, since no one in the world other than the people of Israel have free choice. There is a statement in the Wisdom of Kabbalah about this: the heads of ministers are in the hands of God. That is, those in ruling positions around the world have no free choice in how they think and act, since the demands of the system of nature operate on them in order for them to carry out what needs to unfold in nature. I24 English News Channel. From my Facebook page, Michael Lakeman, the 15th of August 2019. It was a pleasure having the I24 News English crew here today at our headquarters in Petah Tikva. They interviewed me about the uniqueness of Bnei Baruch, how we teach Kabbalah, and why it's becoming so popular in our time. I explained the difference between authentic Kabbalah and other teachings. We talked about how our organization welcomes individuals of all colors, genders and nationalities, from all over the world. Evolution of Desires, Part 6. The Egocentric Orientation of Desires. Question: do all desires have an egocentric orientation? Answer: absolutely. I do everything just for the sake of my beloved self. Even if I do something as if for the sake of someone else, it is only because he or she is dear and important to me. Question: so our desires have a certain intention, which is aimed at filling these desires in a person. The program of our desires, as the Kabbalists say, is maximal pleasure with minimal effort. Answer: this is a law of nature. In other words, optimization is when I want to enjoy as much as possible with a minimal cost, and so on at every level. See how we sit, how we do something. Any movement, mental or physical, no matter what we think or do, is carried out in such a way that brings us maximum benefit, enjoyment, and fulfillment. Maybe, at the same time, we spend a huge amount of energy, for example, as when playing football. It doesn't matter. The main thing is that I always try to optimize my efforts for my benefit. From Cab TV's Basics of Kabbalah, December 3, 2018. New Life Number 271. The Strong and the Weak in Society.
Hello, and thank you for being with us here on New Life, the educational series with Rav Lightman. Hello, Rav Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael. And today we want to talk about our life, a new life, meaning we want to understand our life better, and as a result of that understanding, to know how to take them to a more advanced place, a more secure, joyous place. And we think in depth into about our life, it kind of divides into two places. Sometimes we're strong, sometimes we're weak. There are those amongst us that are strong, and there are those amongst us that are weak. And whoever was strong can find himself weak tomorrow. This whole subject matter, especially in the very sensitive crisis of finances today, is something we would like to scrutinize and in order to understand life better and to take them to a new place. Yael, why don't you open, please, our discussion? So today we're going to start with a certain light historical summary of weak and strong. As we see throughout history, there are those that are weak and there are those that are strong. If in the past whoever was poor, it had to do with a certain social standing, it was considered even a certain handicap. And if you were associated with a certain class, whether it was the powerful one or the weak one, you couldn't move from it. That was the state you were stuck with throughout the years. Whether it was with your family, your tribe, your standings, your caste, and so on. We live in a modern society where it's easy to move from state to state. My grandmother, for example, my great-grandmother, who was a proud Polish woman, she came from a very poor family. All that she wanted in life was to be rich. She didn't get married till she was 30 years old. You should just understand, in those days, a long time ago, She wanted to get married with someone rich. And some rich person in her village was a widower. She got married with him, and she moved from a very low level layer to a very high level with servants and flour mills all over. She had a supermarket and a movie, a cinema theater of her own. She moved from a very low caste to a very high caste. And today this is very possible. We are already in a period in which there are unlimited possibilities. We can truly move from state to state. And just as you move from poor to rich, you could also fall. And we talked about this in the previous program. And the question is, if throughout history, this is considered development, this situation, where at once we belong to a family, to a tribe, to a very fixed caste or level. If you were a cobbler's son, then you lived as a cobbler all your life. Or if you were from the respectable elite, then you remained in that level. Today we can move from place to place. We as people, do we see this as development? The ability to choose. We can't say whether this is good or bad, but this is development. And probably every development is for the good, all in all. Though we have nostalgia, and really there's in general a problem that we develop in a different pace. Not only in all of humanity, but the media develops fastest. And the worst develop educational systems. So therefore there's such a big difference between the young generation, which is already running ahead, it's already disregarding all that there is, and then the media, his modern media instruments, he's already passed all his parents and the whole study system and the whole scholastic system already 1,000 years ahead. In general, they're thinking differently. They just don't understand us. They don't get us. We've come to a state in which that's where we are. It also happens to us with the fact that we erased all the differences between all people. So if we did it in Europe, from the French Revolution and the 17th century, and since then till today, it's more than 200 years. And afterwards, there were also all sorts of wars for freedom, for equality. All of a sudden, cultures join this that are totally not associated with this, where there are still places where they're still like in the Middle Ages. We've got African tribes to pluralism and the liberalism that we have in America, and they're demanding the same rights. After all, they're not even in that perception yet, in that grasp. Meaning there are here many confusions and problems and a clash between cultures and developments that nevertheless demands a lot of time. And our time, because it needs to reach a certain goal, probably a specific purpose, it is going through this acceleration in development, these first those. And it seems to me that you're saying, oh, strong people, to me it seems that the state is much worse, that there are developed ones and undeveloped ones. There are those that use the communication skills only when they talk to their grandmother, because that's the way that they use it. And there are those that from within already, they're organized and ordered for all those connections. They say that the new generation cannot hear. It also cannot read. In hearing, we existed throughout all the generations until even till the stage of being apes, and then till the print system was invented in, I think, the 16th century. But before that, there was a period where we only spoke, the period of signs. Then there was a period of writing. Later, the period of the print. Since the period of the print, the period of the radio. Then the television. And today we are with all those periods together in a state in which any person can control them. We have the internet. I could do clips and movies. I talk. I find myself before the whole world. So the pace has become with great acceleration, meaning time is getting shorter, and we're not paying attention. We think that, well, 20, 30 years ago, we were like our kids are today. Even 40 years, we don't understand that it's like once, maybe 1,000 years would go by. And therefore, the gaps between the rich and the poor, they're important. But, of course, compared to all the differences, compared to all the systems that clash and develop that we're going with, that we're seeing, this is just a small part, and truly a small part in all of our development. But what you're right about is that the elite and the difference between the elite and the very weak, the lowest, the poor, is very, very different. And if once we were to develop, we used to develop, well, it started from the period when writing was invented. When the society started becoming more equal. Why? Because everyone used only speaking, and what there is in speaking is equal for everyone. When, for the first time, was there a difference created between human beings? I know how to write, and I also know how to read. We are special. Then there was already an elite that was created. Culture, education, science, and so on. So, since that time until today, that's how it is. That a difference occurred between the rich and the poor. And always the rich and the poor were supposed to be in a society so that there will be a stimulus for the development of the society. What? Well, because each person would want to become rich if it's full. There are those periods in which a slave didn't think that he would at some point be something else. Rather, no, he knows that he knew that this was his life, and the societal opinion controls him, and he would agree with that. And basically, you gave him food, he would live, and he was okay, he was satisfied. We don't see that there were all of a sudden riots during the times of slavery. They agreed with it because the slave was important. He was valued. He was a good asset, and his owner or his lord would protect him. But development, which is more and more, it demanded more and more acceleration. And after that, instead of that, they received emancipation, they received freedom. It would be better if they would work in a better way, in a more beneficial way. They could bring much more prophet than when they were slaves. Therefore, it's better for me to release him and to give him to be with a family, with his children, let him grow, care for himself and everything. But it's worthwhile for me to receive from him if in such a way I'm certain that I will receive from him more than if he will work for me as a slave, where he'll barely move himself and I can't do anything about it. And so that's the period that came. Also, better agriculture tools came up for processing of wine and oil and fun. And meaning, we ourselves, or the rich themselves, were interested in progressing people from poor to a better state, or to a middle class, or even better, in order to give them a stimulus, of course, in order to profit from them. That's the process is very simple. It's personal profit. But the poor from this personal profit they profited, just like the poor China that was so poor and so kind of unknown and thrown, but because they could use the cheap labor, so within 20, 30 years they were basically inflated with such treasures of technology that today it's already they're beating everyone. Meaning the rich ones themselves are progressing the poor one. And you couldn't say that it was necessarily a bad thing. Rather, it's a very powerful stimulus for a society to develop, where there are poor and rich. And we don't have here, these are for our ego, for our egotistical society and the individualistic ego of each and every one, this difference that I have where to advance to progress to in life, to a little bit more, a little bit more, maybe retirement and a trip and insurance and this and that. These are the things that are definitely there. So, therefore, I'm about to finish. We need to see this division of poor and rich throughout history, and also according to the development of connection between people. And that's why I said writing and print and what's going on today. All these things, if we summarize until today, all of this operated for the development of the world and for the development of man. And if we were to continue with our ego onwards to develop, then we would have to develop only in such a way where there's a human society which has a rich part, a poor part. There's fools and wise, there are sick and healthy, strong and weak, and more and more, more successful, less successful. There are princes and there are workers. That is how the world is built. And all of this was in the right, in order for it to exist and use each and every one's ego in the right way, through competition. But we have come to a state today, a very special state, as we see that our ego, instead of developing us, is eating us. It's a wonder that no egotistical system we have, which we've built meticulously throughout history, another 100 years and another 100 years, how many people suffered, how many tried to invent all kinds of things, inventions and developments and whatnot. In the end, we've come to a state which is so good that we can even come to a state in which there would be no poor. Seemingly. This is how people thought, let's say, in the middle of the 20th century, that soon there would be no poor. We will give freedom to Africa and to all the third world countries. It won't be a third world country. It will be the second world, maybe the first world. And everything will be okay. So that they will develop. And all of a sudden we started to discover that this division to poor and rich doesn't operate anymore for the sake of human development, or this is the human society development. That this division becomes destructive. That rich people don't want to advance the weaker layers to anything. They even neglect them and think that it's best to even lose them, destroy them. What for? We have today automation, we have robots, all sorts of technologies. We don't need so many people. People are leaving work, their jobs, and we see that there's no need in them. From 7 billion people, maybe there's a need for a billion. What to do with all the rest? Who will feed them? Who will care for them? They will come to eat us up. That's what the rich people are thinking. They'll spoil our whole life. They're breathing for no reason. Not only are they polluting Earth, there's really not enough oxygen for everyone. There's no place on the land for everyone. There's enough water and all that. Hey, what are they doing? What for? So if a person is in contradiction with still vegetative and animate, which exist in harmony between them, we know that if we, let's say, destroy the flies, then what happens with some other species? If we mess with the bees, then we won't have plants that grow because of lack of pollination and so on. In short, there is a circle, which is a circle of qualities, a circle of connections in nature. As all of nature, still vegetative and animate, lives in harmony and maintains one another. You can't you kill wolves, then the sheep will be sick, or the deer, or something. There have to be these and those, and constantly in harmony. This is the same thing like with us, the rich and the poor. Only there, it's weak and strong. Whereas now we have come to a state that in human society it doesn't work. It doesn't work. We've stopped to be like animals. We are now becoming human beings, in which there isn't this division that can advance them egotistically. That if someone is strong or rich, he's more, he's control, but also in his control, he also helps the poor one to advance and so on. Meaning these need those and those need these. Today, the rich ones do not need the poor people. They don't need them. Even if a few billions would somehow disappear from Earth, that's a new thing. And therefore, today, to look at the poor and the rich, we need to look at it from a very special new angle. That the rich people think of losing the poor people. And it's truly like that. Because there's no need in them. Completely. And here we'll see this. We're yet to see this. If we were to understand all these things and see how it's happening in the whole Arab Spring and all sorts of other uprisings and things that exist here and there in the world, it's just the beginning. But we will see these results truly in a very clear and broad manner and revealed manner. There just won't be what to do about it. Why am I saying that? Because the poor people don't have any hope. To wait, to expect for help from the rich people. Rather, there's only one thing: to decide between them a good connection as such that it will give them a special force, a special social force, that the rich ones will not be able to even get close to them. That the poor must decide of a special connection between them. They have to define it, not to do riots and revolutions like it used to be. Today it's already completely unrealistic. But they have to define such a connection between them so that a force will be revealed in them of unity, a force of mutual guarantee in which the rich won't be able to connect with them, that's one, and two, that the rich will be envious of them. Because for the time being, also the rich people are starting to see their foundations being very unstable, uncertain, as truly the infrastructure is kind of crumbling under their feet. And therefore, only in such a manner the poor can be saved and to come to a state in which they will define the new order of equality in the world, connection in the world, unity, mutual guarantee, and oneness in the world. That's in short.
I have many questions that have risen. I only gave a few points. I didn't talk about why the media are so influential on our awareness, why specifically,
well, the whole process. Actually, I spoke about it in previous programs, but why the process is as such and why specifically in our times we are entering into a period which is called the period of man and not the period of the beast, as we've advanced all throughout history by our ego all the time, and therefore we're going to have a different type of existence and culture and education, and our life will be different. And from today onwards, it's already several dozens of years, it's already different. So you're talking about a change of a trend that the weak. I am saying it like this. For the moment, we've basically realized and implemented all the technology that needed to help man be more productive. We entered a situation, a state of robotization, automation. We don't need people anymore. For the first time in history, we don't need human beings. And this here is the problem. So what should the relation be here between the poor and the rich if I don't need them? Once I made schools for them, I brought them from the village to the city, I organized accommodations for them, I gave them pensions and social security, health care, all kinds of things, all kinds of systems. Why? Because I needed good, healthy laborers from which I get my profit from. It was worthwhile for me. I sent them to study in universities and so on and so forth. Those who worked for me, because I, let's say, I'm the owner of some big international corporation,
So I need every day, every year, to bring in more and more people and more and more people. Today I don't need to. Today I need a very small, restricted concentration of people, a minimalistic amount of people in my factory that will invent all kinds of machines for me. And those machines will do the work instead of people. I don't need not to worry about their health care or their insurances or any kind of problems. So what do I need those that I'm firing? I don't need them. Let them die. The egotistical calculation is pretty simple. Therefore, the attitude today between poor and rich is completely different from before. There used to be a interrelationship of codependence. And today, the rich people are connected between themselves and all of the world, and the poor are not even. It's not that if I come to him and kind of grab him in the throat, he can just run away. Everything is very liquid today. And there isn't really who to turn to and what to do. And also, the government and the police and the army, they're all together with them. So it works out that the poor person today has no need whatsoever. The moment you're not needed, you're zero, even less than zero. It's too bad that you exist. What would they want for there to be here, those rich people? So it'd be cleaner, so it'd be nicer. Why do we need 7 billion people? What do we need this mess for? After all, for what? Let there be more place for golfing and all kinds of other games. Let there be, what for, you know? There's no point, there's no need. Why do we need millions of cars on the streets? No. If there were half a billion people in the world, up to a billion, that's the maximum, and even less, then the world would be different. Also, the climate would be different. We won't be pressing on nature as much. We won't, in such a dramatic manner, we'll change what's going on with the environment. And look what's happening here. I mean, from year to year, it's even worse and worse. So what remains? So what we need, first of all, is to calm those people down, and therefore we're giving drugs. And we're giving a green light to the drugs. We want to at least stop the childbirth rate. Let them stop multiplying. If we will do it in a way through the media, through we'll make gay and lesbian connected to each other, by us spreading out that it's good to be a bachelor or a bachelorette. At least we will, if in every family there will be only one, then instead of 7 billion, there would one child, there would already be 3.5 billion instead as the offspring. Nevertheless, meaning we don't need to kill, but through the media, through the brainwashing, as we say, we can come to a point where there are numbers that are acceptable. Otherwise, it's really a problem. I'm not laughing from this. I'm just saying that we don't have what else to do. If I look on the side of the rich people, let's say I'm rich, let's say it's a poor person. Well, what will you say? What kind of complaints do you have? I can bring my distresses, but what can I do with it? I can only say, okay, for the time being, we'll give them some kind of crumbs from our table, but under the condition that we will also disseminate to them as a clear fact that, let's say, two children in a family, then there will be a poor family. It won't get anything. One child, that's okay. If so, and if not at all, no children, even better. They'll get vacations, they'll get the ability to go to the coffee shop, to the bar, to go overseas, and so on. Soon they'll die, and there won't be anyone after them. So already we're in such a way, we're, you know, restricting humanity. So no one has an interest to change the state. There is an interest to change the situation that instead of 7 billion, for there to be 1 billion. This is the interest of the rich people. Okay. And what other interest is it? And what's the interest for the poor people? The poor people don't care. They only care, as long as I'm alive, let me somehow live. Could there be someone after me or not be someone after that follows up? We don't care about that. We're today in a state that children leave home so earlier, they're so disconnected from their parents. So really, whether I'll have children, if I won't, it is certain that if I won't have children, I'll live good and quietly. That's enough for me. It's enough for me. Never in history was there such a situation. Today, yes, this is the opinion that blossoms in humanity. So the strong survives. It's actually a nature law. It's not a natural law. Yes, it's an egotistical law for the time being. But for the time being, the ego, what's going on here, this is in the trivial, regular way, if we just continue to develop this way. But for the time being, the ego is finishing. It's already not giving us filling. Meaning, for the time being, systems stop working. Meaning those rich people even can't continue in the way that they continued previously. The fact is, where was this bubble and this crisis? Between the rich people. How did the rich people profit if the poor people won't buy from them? Meaning they need to invent to themselves some new fulfillment. Meaning, if I'm bald from this side and from that side, if there won't be people with buying power and they won't buy, then how will I get rich? And I want more and more. If there were people, where will they have the buying power from? I'm not going to give them to work. I'm not going to let them profit because for the time being, I'm putting in machines and automation. So what will I do? So the rich person, for the time being, is also seeing that he's in a certain trap. And what to do? And then, for the time being, a competition starts between them. Who is going to survive more between them? But this is only periodical. This is for another 10, 15 years, that's how I think, maximum. And after that, it will already be, but for things still, the soul calculation comes, the scrutiny comes, that our ego just stops working. It's not letting us enjoy anymore. Even with the instruments. Who am I going to sell these machines to? Meaning, I'm so choked up with the dollars and I have nowhere to develop to. And also from within, I'm feeling that it's not bringing me any fulfillment, any satisfaction. We see that the percentage of suicide, specifically in the richer countries, and more than that, meaning there's a multifaceted development, but what I see here, well, it's like in our lives. There are many planes and many layers and shapes and forms of relations. Life is not kind of like one-sided. That's why I think that we will see them also, the rich ones, in despair. And also, they will receive this influence from the poor ones as well. It's just like religion was taken. Well, Christianity is mostly, also Islam and also some of the Hindu things, specifically through the slaves and the elites of back then received the religion. I think it would influence this time too, as well, if the poor people, the failed parts of society, will succeed to build a connection between them, a good connection between them, and will manage to feel that it's good for them in this connection, and to, they will manage to attain truly a new degree of existence, this will penetrate to the elites as well, and will give them a way to get closer to the top. So how would you define the role of the weak ones in this new state? Be careful from the sons of poor people, because from them the Torah will come. That's how it's written. What does that mean? It means that specifically in this example of connection for unity, for a new life, to the fact that they need to live in an equal manner, that they need to consume only in a way that we need to live, and all the rest needs to be in a higher degree, in the degree of a human, and not the degree of a beast that eats everything around her and destroys everything around her. All this we need to understand. I didn't understand. What's the role of the poor people in the new era? So far we talked especially on, we could say even that the rich people, but even that the elites, like in the international elites, meaning the highest level of richness globally. We understood from their perspective that the moment that we pass the stage in which technology has come to a peak, and machines can replace people, so I don't really need people, so it's enough I have a billion people, that would be a good buying power. I'll create the robots, I'll have open spaces, green areas, and all that, and everything will be good. So far we spoke about them. Now we tried to change the angle of view, and we talked about those who are called weak, poor. What's their role in the modern era? Let's try to look at them. The weak and the poor must connect between them in order to survive. What does it mean to connect? To connect means that they need to understand that only, like animals, at a time of a problem, that they all come to connection between them, and it's not connected to personal profit, but rather they feel that together they have strength, they have a power, a force to survive. It's a normal, natural force. Just like we are when at a time of war or when there's a problem of some sort. And why? Because there's something that kind of unites us together, that includes, it's common for everyone. It's general for everyone. So this common thing for everyone will be disparagement of the weak layers in all the countries without anything out of the norm here, and there will be nothing we can do about it. Every politician that will say that I am going to uplift the lower layers upwards, I'm going to care for them, I'm going to help them with the taxes, and with that he is laughing straight in their face, and even is crying after that. That he's ready, and it's a lie. Why? Like none other. Because the world is not progressing in that direction. What does it mean? If a politician says like that, it means that he doesn't even deserve to sit there in the government. What kind of government will he be able to do for the people if he doesn't know that we're not progressing towards there being work for everyone? For everyone to be able to earn and buy what they need for their existence. What serious kind of person would, if he's lying, I understand. But if he's talking seriously from his heart, then either he's insane or he's a real good actor and a liar. And it can't be any other way. And I don't think that they're naive. They just want their their seat there and then to sit and to earn and to profit, because there it's good to be up there. It can't be. Do you understand? You can't go against nature, against the process. Rather, what does a person that really wants to come to control need to say to the people? But only if he really thinks this way. I have come to bring them connection. What is connection? Connection so that you will connect together, that you will unite together into one band, like brothers who complete each other. You will feel that in your connection there is a force, not a force against the rich, that you will start to go after them and beat them up and to take everything away from them. No. But rather, in your connection, you will reach a great force in which you will start to define and decide about the buying power, the success measures in society. You will build the society for yourself as if a state within a state. No one can stop this, and no one will bother you. Start on your own as much as you're capable to serve each other in simple systems for maintaining life and existence. If you unite, the rich people can't do anything against you. They can't. The people that go out to the streets can do everything under the condition that it knows what he's doing it, what he's doing and why he's doing it. And not just that he's just shouting and being loud. A good politician that would be able to appeal to the people in such a way will be able to reach great achievements. Because in that, he actually is coming for the correction of the world. He wants to bring the world to equality. Also the rich people, for them to receive an example through this and accept this form of existence, which is confident, this rich from within, from the fulfillment, they will receive it as a religion, as they once took on themselves Christianity and Islam and Indian beliefs. I didn't understand the last point. What does he want in relation to the rich people? I understood that if he tells the poor, if you come, all the poor of the world, and unite, you will be able to survive this very difficult financial crisis. You have nothing to expect from the rich people because they have no interest that they had before throughout all the generations to advance you. Now, they don't need you. There's robots. They're taken care of. You don't have any choice. Forget about the rich. Let's come all the poor of the world and unite. Yes. But it's not like unite like before. It's not the French Revolution or the Bolsheviks, that like something like that. So what, yes? Then, these were wars for a better distribution of the wealth. Today there is no better, more just distribution. I'm sorry. If I have $100 million, it's not a lot today. And you only have $100. Why do we need to share? There's no reason. I hope that the hundreds with you and you're the million, so it's good for me maybe if we distribute this wealth. And what more? Meaning the connection between us, either disconnect or war, disconnect meaning not disconnect, either war or connection or peace, a connection. What kind of connection can there be only under the condition that we need each other? To the degree that I don't need you and you don't supposedly need me, because I'm not giving you work. I don't need you as a worker because I have automation, and you don't need me because you're not coming to me. You have nothing to get from you. So there's a disconnect. So it's like we exist on two different planets, right? Completely, right? And it goes and increases, and it's not like it used to be once before. It works out that you need to organize your life without associating your life with me. What are you coming to me with complaints? Please, you want, there's no problem. You see how what happened in Detroit. They folded up, they closed their factories and left. Who remained there? The same workers that used to work in those factories, and it used to be a real, you know, a booming city, Detroit. It was a super power place. And what about now? A ghost city, truly. I've been through there. We had a convention nearby a few years ago. And it's truly something that it's like a nuclear bomb fell there. And I know this city also from before, like in 1985. Well, in such a reality, what do you recommend for them to do? No, there's nothing to do. Those that remain? Oh, there's no problem. If they could unite, they could find for themselves some place where they could kind of keep themselves busy, do self-service, do work outside the city. They would unite and do on their own the right groups for their existence. That's for sure. That's for sure. And instead of that, there is crime, drugs, something terrible going on there. No one wants to live there. Everyone's running away. And it's, I think today there are like 700,000, the population, instead of what used to be like 3 million there. You're talking about the fact that people don't have the ability, if they would connect their very light resources together, they would have much greater force. Okay, so let's stop here and let's try to measure something that happens in other social models. I want to look at like Scandinavian countries and what the model that they have there. It doesn't matter what you have or what you don't. You have a certain security and a promise from the government that you will have, or from the state, that you don't have to worry about existence because no one's going to get into hunger. So I want to measure this because the engine here, because you said that no one has anything and no one will give you anything. I won't let you do that. Where does the country take money to give out? From the taxes. Oh, from the taxes. Where are the taxes from? From buying, from all the processes. After all, you're an economist. And everything moves to robotics. How much will the country give to those who don't work? No, I wanted to, even before the leap to that. No, you're talking about what we have now. And in these countries have yet to enter into the crisis. They haven't yet, but they're going to start to get into this crisis too. And then you'll bring them to me as an example. Well, let's see, robotics will come and replace almost all the laborers in the world, other than those that have to engineer them and work on the robots themselves. But other than that, the taxes are going to go down, there won't be as many resources, the country won't be able to give you. On the other hand, if the price of production goes down because of automation, then we'll be able to give out more. But who will you sell it to? I will sell to living people. What living people? A living person needs a home. What, those billion people that remained? Or those poor people who can't even earn enough for bread? Do you understand? Here you're coming to a state, maybe it's not irrational, but their whole life is like this, that you don't have life, your whole life stops because of the robots. No, because the egotistical relations between people. The robots are a result of that. What is egotistical attitude? That, no, I don't care about anyone, I want to profit from anyone as much as possible, and if possible, not to give anyone a penny. That was always. That was. But today, the problem is that I don't need people. Are you seeing what's going on in Europe and in every place? People are without work. Up to 60% of the young people are without work. Can you perceive that or not? Grasp that. Explain to me, what are you going to do with them? How much can we pay them? How much can we give them? From where are you going to take it? Countries are entering into immense debts just in order to secure their income so that they won't burn down the country. So you want to tell me that as for a trend, also countries where that's not the situation in them, because there's countries where that's not the state yet. I'm claiming it's not yet, meaning that we're in a trend, and at the end of the process, all countries will come to this state. Dear sir, you were with me for quite a few years. You remember the ones that used to laugh at me, the economist, the different financial people, even Nobel Prize laureates. There, what crisis? There's no crisis. And within a year, there was a crisis. Everyone thinks like that. So I'm telling you, the trend is... I'm not a fortune teller, but this is how it's going to be. Let's jump forward. Robotics entered, the laborers are out of the employment, and we're all in automation. Now, in this reality, we're trying to understand what is the role of a weak person, of the strong person, and the interconnection between them. Tell me what happens there. The role of the strong one is that he doesn't need people or the weak. For the first time in history, what does he need? He needs machines, if so. Only what? He will hold people that will buy from him and will give back to him what he's giving them. Explain to me, Oren, this economy. How is this possible? That I am rich, I'll maintain you only for you to live so that you can buy from me what I'm giving you. Yes, well, is that worthwhile for me? I have to find a balancing point between the consumerism that will fill me. Where is my extra profit here? Well, if it maintains, of course it's not going to work. You know, in America, there was such a thing. They said, let's give out to each person $100. Yeah, so they can buy. Do you understand what kind of stupidity? But they wanted to give a boom to the economy. Yes. But is this logical that I will hold you just that you will buy from me and the money I gave you? Where is the addition? It's all, you're an economist. So what are you saying? So what is strong? I don't need you. But the fact that I don't need you and the robots are coming to me, then the robots all in all serve me. So I also become slowly, what? Not poor, but kind of not adding to the richness or to my power. Meaning we are now in the integral crisis, global crisis, which all in all, after the poor, is coming also to the rich. But until they will come to the awareness, the rich people, that they have no choice, the poor must give them an example by starting to band together and unite. That's the role of the weak people? Yes, so let's define it. What is the role of the poor people? The reality is like this. To give the role of the poor is to give the rich an example that today we are moving to money, which is not dollars or euro. To money, which is one coin, joy, happiness. Bring some other name of fulfillment. And this they will learn from the poor, that this is worth more than anything else. And what's the role of the rich people in this reality in relation to the whole of society? The rich have a great inner strength, strong character. They have good and correct management. If they will band together with this new paradigm, they will be able to help greatly to all of human society become very quickly to whole life. What is a whole life, perfect life? Whole life in which everyone is equal, everyone's living good, no one receives more than he deserves, everyone protects nature, and the main thing in the connection between them, they start to attain the upper dimension, meaning whole eternal life. What does that mean? Because their perception from each exiting himself towards connection with others changes, and they start to feel what is outside of men. What do they start? They start feeling what's outside of human beings. Outside of who? Outside of a man. Which man? Each of them? I don't understand. This is probably what we're going to talk already about next time. Sort of, it has to do with the perception of reality. Okay, so nevertheless, I would want, in the minute that remains, we talked about the role of the weak, we talked about the role of the strong one, which is not so clear, the role of the strong one. What's the role of the strong one? To lead humanity forward. But where is he going to, why won't they lead here? Here they won't lead, because here, the moment the ego stops working, the rich people cannot lead in anything. So what's their role? Their role now? Just to wait until the poor start leading society with this new spirit of connection with people. Yes. And then if such a spirit will reign, then the poor will start the process and the rich will join. And then what's going to be their role? To be good managers. And what's a good manager? A good manager is to lead all of humanity to equality and to the upper dimension. The upper dimension is not an upper dimension in money, but rather in spiritual life, which we will talk about next time. So the weak lead the spirit and the strong organize the structure, actually? Yes, that's right. The right structure? Yeah, that's right. We need to work now with the poor. There's still no point in turning to the rich today. Okay, our time is over. So we'll continue next time. Thank you very much, Rav Lightman. And thank you, Yael. Also, thank you for being with us. We're connecting, we're building for ourselves a new life. All the best, and so long.